something flammable in your glass. It's again. Jaded Gamercast again. My name is Lang. With me as always is Nathan. One of the joys of podcasting, and you know I'd like to talk about this for a second, is that sometimes you spend a half hour recording.
Oh, we're up to like 45 minutes. This was going to be a long episode.
It was relatively long because, of course, obviously we're talking about 6th edition. But sometimes software on computers tells you to go fuck yourself, and you've been drinking for a bit, and it decides not to save what you've recorded. So you have to start over. We were drinking champagne. We are now drinking solid white Russians, standard, true, traditional, 3 shots of alcohol with 1 shot of milk, white Russians. With me as always is Nathan, as I said before. Okay, so we are talking about the release of 6th edition. We are going to take a break in the middle of this game to play a game. We've each had a couple games now, and we're going to be kind of talking a little bit about our first impressions, as well as kind of talk about a little bit of final things that we'd like to go into. So, you know, I think that it's something that everybody's looking at right now. Obviously, as we start getting into episodes coming up in the next little bit here, I'm going to turn the microphone now so that we can actually hear what people are saying. All right. you know, we will start getting into a little bit more of a top-down breakdown of the rules and the tactics and things of that nature. But obviously, to anyone who has read the book at this point, there is a lot of changes and there's a lot of change to the mechanics of the game. And just kind of the way that you're going to have to build your list and the way that you're going to look at specific units. So let's get right into it right now. We're going to talk about a couple of things that we particularly like, which are changes in the new edition, and things that we are kind of unsure about so far. So, Nathan, just like last time, go right into it. Why don't you mumble some words at us? Oh, that's an inside joke.
Yeah, that's right.
Nobody listened to what we recorded earlier.
Well, that's because the computer gods did not get their virgin sacrifice.
Honestly, if this one breaks, there's no episode this week. I'm sorry. It's just, it will not happen. It'll be me doing a blog post about how Audacity is bullshit.
I was going to say, what, you don't want to record a third time the same thing?
Oh, Jesus. I don't think I can handle that much drinking before a game, because we're coming back.
Pour something flammable into you. You know what? Fuck you. Fuck you.
My kids will be home at that point.
Oh, right. Good point. Okay, so rules that I like. To repeat myself, again, you know, I'll try not to make as many bad puns about that as I can. Because
there were four.
Oh, yeah.
Four, so far. Can clean that up.
That's right. All right, so rules that I like. First of all, both are coming out of the assault phase. I mean, I have always played assault armies through 3rd, 4th, and 5th edition. Even now in 6th, I'll probably keep playing assault armies. Rules that I like are the "our weapons are useless" rule. Mm-hmm. I think that it is fantastic that now when you literally cannot hurt something, rather than just standing there bending over and waiting for him to wipe your unit out, which in the case of 30 Termagants versus a Dreadnought is never. Mm-hmm. So it's just like, oh, you've locked me down all game. I'll never destroy your Dreadnought. You'll never kill my Gaunts. Thanks. Yeah. I love the idea that there is now recourse for you. So you can choose to fail your morale check and try to get away. I also love that it's exactly as if you just failed and it's a sweeping advance
and all
that.
It's just nice to have the finality to it.
Well, yeah, and that's...
You know, not waiting 4 turns for it to finally finish.
Well, and like I said, you know, in the case of a Dreadnought versus 30 Gaunts, there is not enough game. The Dreadnought does not have enough attacks. So it's literally going to, you know, even in old 5th edition where it could run in and it could punch 3 Gaunts to death and Fearless would kill 3 more.
Yeah.
It didn't matter because, like I said, there just wasn't enough game to chew through all 30 of them.
And you couldn't support the Gaunts either.
And I couldn't.
They were piled in
well,
so heavy.
And that's it. Well, and the other thing is the rules always said that I had to pile in base and then form circles. So until they were killed down to 4 or 5, there was not actually a space open for me to charge in a monstrous creature to rip that Dreadnought, limb from limb. So I love the idea that, gambling on the sweeping advance, that I can withdraw my unit and bring in the heavy hitters that's going to destroy it. And again, I don't mind the sweeping advance because I've been caught a number of times. I mean, even at Kyle's tournament that I played my demons at, a defiler charged a unit of 20 bloodletters. Now, bad example because being fearless, you can't choose to fall back with "our weapons are useless" because you automatically pass your morale check instead of having to, choose to fail it. But the fact of the matter is it happens.
Yeah.
It happens all over the place. I mean, you know, especially now with longer charges and with Fleet on something like a Defiler. Honestly, I think Defilers are close combat like gods now because Fleet lets them reroll their charge distances so they can reliably make those longer charges.
Move. It's a nice combination.
Move, fire your ordnance, move, fire your ordnance, move, fire your ordnance, long charge. I mean, like, it's pretty cool now that that they have that option. But, I mean, I love that idea. Our weapons are useless. My unit is fucked. It's a write-off. It will not accomplish anything all game. So if you kill it on a sweeping advance, good for you. But, you know, at least I have the chance to deal with your dreadnought as opposed to just locking both units down for the rest of the game.
Yeah.
The other thing that I love that I really feel helps sort of clean up close combats, because again, I play assault armies, let's stick with the assault phase, is the initiative pile-ins. I think that it is just this, you know, it's an elegant rule. And I mean, I said this in the last recording, I'll say it again. To me, it was one of those things, the first time I played John, we were fucking it up. We weren't playing it right.
I had to correct you later when I was playing Terry.
I mean, we were fucking it up.
You can't trust Asians. That's the rule to take away from this.
I mean, that's really all it is. But I mean, it's just like, you know, we were fucking it up.
Bastards. Look, good at math, bad at reading, apparently.
That's right. I should have asked him to make my list while I read the book. Fuck. You know, but I mean, like, when you see the way it works, the fact that, you know, everyone that has that initiative gets to make that pile-in move to try to get into the combat. I mean, Terry's 20-man crew unit with 12 hounds charged your unit of 30 orc boys. And again, you know, watching it, so it's just like she charged, and she was decently close, and she rolled well, so she got a lot of models in base. And then with the pile-in, all of her crew hounds, all 12 of them, were able to get in, and they fought. And like you said, they wiped you out. I mean, she was rolling hot, so I mean, they fucked up your front rank. And then Initiative 3 went to the Kroot, and they had to fill in the gaps where your models were. So rather than it just being an issue where all of the Kroot get to automatically attack, because they had to move even farther to engage into base contact and thus be eligible to start giving supporting attacks,
right?
She still had models that were out of range. So it wasn't an issue of, you know, Initiative pile-ins means everyone gets to strike, unless you're small unit versus small unit. Like maybe 10 Marines on 10 Marines is everyone piles in 3 inches and fights in the middle, and yay. But it's just like, you know, she stepped in, she fought, then your orcs got to step in and fight. And I mean, I thought that the rule just looked elegant because, again, as we said in the last recording, it gets to the meat.
That's the last time we'll say that,
by the way. All right, fine. Well, maybe.
Nathan has been drinking. And, I was going to say, you're enjoying that White Russian right now?
Yes, I am. Oh, my God.
Okay, well, one of the things that you had said before, in a previous conversation, I was looking around awkwardly at that point, was that you one of your initial feelings when reading the rule book was that this is definitely gearing back to shooting armies being the forefront of the game. I had agreed with you and said that that's the way that it should have been, because there was this really stupid idea in 5th edition that everything needed to be dumbed down and everything needed to be close combat. And shooting was just kind of a byproduct, and you had said this, it wasn't in the last podcast, so go fuck yourselves. But really, you had said at one point that shooting was a byproduct, it was something you do when you couldn't get into combat.
Yes.
Right? And now that's not the case. I feel like it's really back on track with the game. I absolutely love the assault phase and the initiative pile-ins, because it really gets to the meat of combat right away. There's no waiting around, there's no floppy first charges in the first round of combat because you can only get 2 or 3 guys in on a long charge. Like, none of that bullshit. And again, we're soothsayers of the internet.
Yeah.
J-list celebrities we may be, but apparently we're nothing but right when it comes to previous episodes and the things that we said would come in 6th edition. Like random charge ranges, pre-measuring, psychic powers for everybody, and psychic defense for everybody. You know, and then they nerf the psychic hood, which is awesome.
Yep. I am very grateful for the nerf to the
psychic. I don't think anybody's not. I think only Space Marine players are like, oh, man.
Yeah, Marine players are like, that's fucking stupid. I mean, psychic hoods were like, I mean, nerfing them is just fucking stupid.
So you're still going to take librarians? Yeah, they're fucking awesome. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, exactly. Well, and that was the thing, is I remember in 5th edition when armies started getting more and more psychic, and it really started with Tyranids, because I think Tyranids were the first army release in 5th edition that could throw out 5, 6, 7, 8 psychic powers a turn.
Right.
You know, and then they kind of one-upped it, you know, so it's just like, then you had Blood Angels, where they could get Librarian Dreadnoughts and Librarians, and they could start throwing out lots of psychic powers, Mephiston, you know, lots of different things like that. You know, took a break with Dark Eldar, who have no psykers, which great, whatever, it fits the fluff, I like it. And then Grey Knights, they just, like, fucking shit the bed. They're just like, hey, you know what, Tyranids have lots of psykers, okay, so let's triple that number. So if Tyranids are gonna have 6 psykers, let's make sure Grey Knights have at least 20 to start, and let's go to town. So, I mean, when you were in this environment of a very psyker-heavy in 5th edition, the librarian was the auto-include for his psychic hood. Fuck if he ever did anything.
No, exactly.
I mean, you know, you weren't really relying on him having psychic powers. I mean, fuck, I ran into so many non-epistolary, just level 1, basically, librarians, because they existed for a fucking force hood, and that was it. That was the beginning and the end. They took the one, you know, the one psychic power that would be the most useful, whether it be 4-stone for the 5-up invuln or reroll successful invuln saves.
Yes, right.
You know, for screwing over Thunderhammer Terminators. Thunderhammer Storm Shields.
Well, why the fuck not?
You know, so I mean, it's just like, that was what you did in 5th edition. Now it feels like with psykers and with the psyker magic lores, go fuck yourself if you call it anything else.
Well, I was trying to think of that, actually. Like, what are we going to start calling them? Are we going to just call them lores, or are we just going to call them rulebook psychic powers? Because lores is just going to be the easiest thing to call them.
We both play fantasy, they're lores.
They're lores.
The lore of biomancy.
Well, so much of this game has shifted itself toward fantasy. This was something I was going to talk about in the later half, which I'll probably get into a little bit more, but the majority of special rules that we're seeing right now really are lending themselves more and more toward fantasy. The fear rule, you know, there's at least three or four other rules I want to talk
again.
About.
I mean, I
think any additional psychology-based stuff in the game is good. I think anything that you're going to add that's going to have anything to do with psychology is going to be very, very good.
You know what?
But what you were saying about the psychers actually leads into one of the things that really upsets me, or kind of has me off on the sides here, and this is skipping around a little bit, but I want to stay on the target here.
Sure.
Like Porkins, it's what I do, is stay on target. But one of the things that I'm unsure about right now is the fact that there's really not all that much psychic defense for the majority of armies out there right now. We talked about them nerfing the psychic hood, but really, you know, there's so many armies out there that are just going to be rolling hoping for a 6. Hoping for a 6 on a very, very regular basis. That's better than nothing, but it really feels bad.
Yeah. Well, especially when you have armies that literally do not have psykers in them. Necrons, Tau, and Dark Eldar do not have psykers. Fuck, even Black Templars don't, because Black Templars abhor the Witch. So, I mean, this is a Marine army that has no access to psykers or librarians. Unless you take allies, in which case, you know, hey, you know, ignore everything I'm saying. But, I mean, if all you're doing is playing your codex, and I mean, who the fuck knows what tournaments are going to go to, because I mean, personally, I'd love to see allies stay in, but if all of the major tournaments, like Adepticon and like Nova, I mean, it was really the only two major tournaments that are local-ish. I mean, even, War Games
American.
Con.
They're North
American. Yeah, North American-based tournaments. I mean, I am looking forward to the ETC nerfing 6th edition back to 5th.
Oh my god, we talked about the fact that like the most hilarious like 2-episode content event is going to be the ETC nerfing the shit out of 6th edition because it's so broken, apparently.
And 8th edition because
5th edition was the most balanced thing in the world, according to the ETC.
Yeah, absolutely.
There was no need for restrictions.
None at all. So I really hope that the 40k gamers lose their shit and nerf the shit out of everything, because it makes for good content for podcasting.
All right, well, while I'm sucking your dick, I agree before that one of the things that you had said was that you really felt like it should have been a 5+, you know, as opposed to a 6, because of all these armies without any psychic defense. And one of my replies to that was that we know that these armies, much like in their response to flyers, just like their response to psychic powers, is going to be a lot of options for additional psychic defense. We're going to see it.
Maybe,
but right
though,
now, it's painful for these people because we're not seeing it in the FAQs.
No, but I mean, that's kind of the point where I'm just like, maybe. The problem is Necrons and Dark Eldar, two of the three armies I named two of the four, I guess, Black Templars, but fuck them. No one plays Black Templars unless you're power gaming. Unless you're power gaming
the old
fourth
ed. Trying to
build
an army in the shortest possible time frame.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly.
You'd still go with Raven Guard so that you have some respect for yourself in the morning.
Hey-o. but I mean, like, two of them, like, they're brand new books. Necrons were literally the newest codex that has been released.
Mm-hmm.
And Dark Eldar were like the third newest. Because, I mean, you know, so I mean, it's just like when you say, hey, we're going to see things. Yeah, but not for years for these armies. So that's why I'm just like, you know, I would have liked to see Deny the Witch being a 5+ with the options to modify it up to a 3+. Especially seeing how, I mean, at least in the Tyranid FAQ, I mean, I have not read anything else. I've only been playing my Tyranid, so, you know, go fuck yourselves if you're saying I'm being biased here. It's just, I'm playing them. I have all of my psykers, and I have shitloads of them, are mastery level 1, except for the Swarm Lord, who's mastery level 2. And when you read the core rulebook, it says that unless that psyker could cast multiple psychic powers a turn, he's mastery level 1. So when you look at the Deny the Witch rule in its entirety, okay, what does it say? It says any offensive ability you can cancel on a 6+ unless you have a psychic hood and you're close enough. If you have another psyker, it's a +1. If you have a more powerful psyker, it's a +2. Now, my issue with that is more powerful psykers are fucking rare. You're basically saying, did I take Chief Librarian Tigerius, Mephiston, Eldrad? Like, did I take a special character psyker? If yes, then great. I'm a higher mastery level. I get a +2 to my dice roll.
That's very strange, actually, that you say it like that, because it does make the game seem like psychic defense is based on special characters and taking them.
You know, it really is, though, because, I mean, with Tyranids, the only mastery level 2 is the Swarm Lord, who's a special character.
Right.
Chief Librarian Tigerius can cast, I think, 3 a turn, so yeah.
He would be mastery level 3.
I guess maybe a generic Marine Epistolary who can cast 2 a turn, or a Farseer would be mastery level 2, but for the most part, the majority of psykers that exist in Warhammer 40,000 are mastery level 1 psykers.
That's so very interesting.
The best you can do is for this 1 or 2 units that my psyker is in, I get a 5+ to cancel it. Right. It just feels really weak. I really wish that they had started at a 5+ with a 4+. And if you are more powerful, so it's just like I'm mastery level 3, you're mastery level 2, I get a 3+ to cancel it. It makes sense because I control the warp better than you. Okay, I'm super powerful.
Let's talk about the goods.
I'm an alpha level psyker.
Yeah.
Oh, Eisenhorn.
Let's do this straight up. That's for me and Ward. I forgot that you weren't in on that inside joke.
What?
All right, so things that I'm really happy about, kind of getting back on track here a little bit, is the very first thing that I love more than anything else is the missions. The variety that we're seeing for the missions and the types of special rules and secondary objectives and main objectives that we're seeing for the missions, I absolutely love. I feel like it's keeping in with the 8th edition style of building objectives and building missions that are going to force players to build balanced lists, lest they be caught in a situation where they can't win a certain scenario.
Mm-hmm.
So really, for tournament organizers, this is very important because they're going to be looking at pulling the scenarios out of the book that are going to force people to take fast attack choices and force people to take heavy support choices. Not just let people play these one-sided lists that are parking lots or are leaf blowers or any number of different things that are going to make the game less fun. They're forcing you to build balanced lists. It's just like 8th edition, and I'm going to make the same plea for tournament organizers to just give us a year. Just give us a fucking year. I'm going to take a drink real quick. Just give us a year to at least play through these rulebook scenarios. I don't want playing cards, Matt. I don't want weird-ass built scenarios that you feel would be hilarious because I want to be able to play in a competitive tournament. I talked to you, this was like 2 or 3 days ago, you and I were talking online, and I said the only reason that people go to tournaments is to play against different people competitively. To win. That's the whole idea of a tournament. The idea that we need to go to a tournament to play fun scenarios we've never played before, and oh my gosh, oh man, having to go punch your character in the face because I get an extra 100 victory points is totally so much better than what I played in my basement. It's bullshit. It does not actually make a fun time. Maybe one person is having a good time out of 3, and that's just bad odds.
Yeah.
But I love the rulebook scenarios. I love the fact that each scenario can have up to 3 deployments. That's what I love.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, I can't talk to 40K with it. I mean, the book's been out for fucking 2 days at this point. But I mean, you know, with fantasy, we're coming up on year 2. I've probably played over 100 games. I still love the rulebook scenario.
I think that's a good point.
I still love going to play a game when it, you know, whether it's a pickup game or it's a tournament or whatever, and seeing that we're playing rulebook scenarios. When I'm playing a pickup game, I roll for it every single time.
Absolutely.
It's not an issue
every
of
time.
You know, and I'll still play the Watchtower when I get it. I still play Blood and Glory, absolutely. Even though my demons, I lose Blood and Glory so much. I'm just like, so in other words, if you, I was gonna say, if you kill my greater demon, my demons lose Blood and Glory, and that's what it comes out. Yeah, right.
One to know, son.
But I mean, like that, you know. So it's just like, I can't speak to whether or not 40K scenarios are going to have this kind of staying power that fantasy has. But I believe it will. I mean, fuck, the book is newer, and at the end of the day, Games Workshop kind of learns from itself. So, I mean, they take what works and they adapt it. And that's why we can see things like pre-measuring and random charge ranges.
Yes.
We can see things like, even in the way the rulebook is laid out when you compare it to the fantasy rulebook, they have a section on just special rules. So it's just like, we're just going to reference the shit out of these. So when we release new codexes, we're going to say, okay, we reference this, and this.
I actually did find that the special rules in the special rules section were very condensed.
Yep.
In the sense that they weren't splitting the special rules off.
Mm-hmm.
They were talking about close combat special rules, shooting special rules, leadership special rules, mission special rules. They were all part of the same section. I really do appreciate that, because since all of our rule books, hardcover, gay high five, they all come with a bookmark. And I think that bookmark is the one that is going to be the most used, because it's the fact that you're going to be referencing that more often than anything else. And again, all of those special rules are very similar to fantasy special rules, like I said earlier.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, again, you know, if you want to pull the comparisons to fantasy, we still have Mysterious Terrain, which I think is fantastic, because, I mean, you know, you said it best, that, you know, and I'm totally going to copy you, where, you know, last night when
suck
you're just
my
like...
dick is the word.
Yes. Okay.
The phrase
right.
you're looking for is
suck
my dick.
My dick. But I mean, you said it best.
You haven't figured out right now, Nathan and I are kind of a gay couple.
No,
his wife is there for visual purposes.
Don't tell our wives.
Don't tell our wives, either of us.
You know, but it's great. Now she listens to this, and now you outed me. Thanks, Lang. The closet was comfortable.
Whatever.
No, but I mean, it's just. In the Warhammer 40,000 universe, we talk about death worlds and, you know, things like that, where it's just like, you know, the Imperium has polluted this. This is a hive world where this is, you know, dangerous and this is that. And I love the idea that, you know, in previous editions, in all previous editions, it was just like, this is a death world. We're walking into the water. Well, is it poisonous? Fuck no. Why would it be poisonous?
No, it's just a forest.
Yeah, I mean, it's a river. It's a forest. It's whatever.
Oh, but there's so many dangerous reptiles. And, oh, there's, like, raptors and everything. But this forest, totally safe. Fairies.
Yeah, 100.
Just fairies.
Yeah.
No big deal.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, I really enjoy that. And so, I mean, I like the idea that, you know, it can hurt. Because, I mean, to give you an idea, in the game we played right before we did this, there was a forest that we, you know, we walked into. Yes. And it was carnivorous plants. So, it's like D3 strength 5 AP dash hits every shooting phase. So, I'm just like, fuck it. I'll walk my Turvagon in and I'll camp in here. And I'll take a fucking cover save on your Doomscythe bullshit and anything else that you do. Because at toughness 6, I don't give a shit. I had those two Termagants left from all the shooting that you did. I'm like, they ain't going fucking near that forest. I'm like, I will go the fuck around. Thank you very much. Because fuck it, they walk in, they're dead. And I love that because you know what? In 5th edition, if you were a combat army, it was always be in cover or get cover between you.
Yes.
And now being in cover is not always the safest thing.
No.
And I love that. I love that. They're giving these things where it's like, no, it's a choice.
Well,
got a unit
it was
30.
Cover hopping in the last edition. That was all you ever did was hop between cover. And because you had so much cover on the table in Warhammer 40,000, because of the way that the rules worked, it was just a cover hopping game. Okay, so kind of pushing us a little bit forward here because...
the one thing I hate, is that what you want?
No, actually, I was going to go into Snapshot.
Okay, go.
I absolutely love Snapshot.
I agree.
The Snapshot rule is applied in about 4 different places in the rulebook, 4 or 5 different places. I feel that every time that it's applied in the rulebook, it is absolutely brilliant. I love the Snapshot rule. I feel like it's something that is bringing 40K back to its roots in the fact that it is a shooting-directed game. And it's a lot of fun to be able to just fire off a bunch of shots. When I was playing your wife, Terry, she was playing her Tau, and I was trying to charge in with my knobs, which was hilarious. And out of 24 shots, she hit 9 sixes. And wiped out like three knobs in the first thing. But, and it was something that I sat there going to myself saying, oh, she's not going to do it. I mean, most she does a wound, right? But like fail my armor saves, fail my pain. Feel no pain, which we agree is not as good as it used to be.
God, I'm already starting to feel drunk. These are some heavy white Russians.
I'm not even lying about the way I built these. That's three shots and a shot of milk. There's no... And we both had a bottle of champagne before we started this.
Well, that's why I said, if you know, like you said, if this file goes corrupt, we don't get a podcast. No, for me, I'm just not... like, we would just be belligerent as shit if we tried.
Well, it would start off with something like... pour something flammable into your glass of gin and give it blah, blah, and then I would have to unplug the mic lest I be electrocuted. I love Snapshot. Let's get back to Snapshot here. Cheers. I feel like Snapshot is a great addition to the rule because it's very scalable. It's one of those things that applies in so many different situations, and I think that we're going to see it more in special rules for specific types of units, where we're going to see something like, and again, I don't think anyone's going to deny that this is a very valid possibility, Long Fangs are going to have a role where they can move and fire with ballistic skill and avoid Snapshot on Overwatch.
You know, probably in the new book, because Space Wolves...
Well, obviously,
I was
in the new
say,
book.
I'm Space, not talking FAQ. I was going to say, Space Wolves are not the number one book anymore, so something has to be done about this. I mean, Grey Knight stole their thunder,
Phil
so...
Phil Killey ain't letting that shit slide. That's all right. I'm saying right now. But yeah, absolutely, I love Snapshot. I feel like it's a great addition to the rules. It definitely adds a new level of depth to a lot of the way that you're going to look at non-combat units that are very shooting-heavy. A Tau Fire Warrior squad of 12 guys snapshotting is going to kill three dudes on
the
income.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, like... And the way Terry plays Tau with of shit tons of Fire Warriors is always one of those things where it's like... Because, I mean, when I look at the rules for multiple charges and for Snapshot and for Overwatch and for all of that stuff, when I was thinking about it, I'm like, okay, so if I play my wife with all of the Fire Warriors that she takes, because she takes fuck tons of them, I'm just like, I'll never multi-charge. Ever. I'm like, fuck it, I don't want to eat four dozen fucking strength five shots on an Overwatch. Like, I'm just like, that is like too fucking much hurt for me.
I will multi-charge with orcs. Right? Yeah. With orcs at toughness four, I feel like a multi-charge is not a terrible idea. And I feel like armies who are able to take 20-man units with a 3+ save like Chaos Warriors are absolutely going to be looking at multi-charges in the majority of their charges. Because they're going to want to spread those attacks out. Yes, you do not get the bonus because it's a disorganized charge. But really, the idea of still... Okay, 20 warriors charging into 12 fire warriors is a massacre. It's fucking ridiculous how much you do. Like, you wipe them out to, like, two fire warriors.
Oh,
right?
you'd probably kill them all. I mean, especially if you took Mark of Khorne or something. And if you want to... That's fair enough. If you want to mitigate it, you take Mark of Nurgle. Now you're toughness five with 20 fucking Marines.
Well, and that's exactly it. Does make Mark of Nurgle very interesting because Overwatch is less effective when you're talking about Mark of Nurgle.
Yes. You know, absolutely. I mean, yeah.
Ooh. All right, so Nathan and I are going to stumble through a game here in a little bit. But Nathan, what's the thing that you are kind of worried about right now in 6th edition?
You know, not so much worried about.
Just unsure.
But just a rule that I don't really care for or think it does anything, and that's Warlord traits. And maybe it's because I'm drinking more, because this wasn't my first answer.
No, it was not.
That
was your first
thing. In the first podcast, we actually talked about Warlord traits, and I shrugged my shoulders indifferently. But I mean, my issue is, and not even an issue, for me, I just find that it adds nothing. I mean, I've only played two games so far, but in both cases, I've literally got up worthless, ones. Like, the first one was, if within 3 inches of an objective, I reroll ones to wound. Well, my fucking warlord had preferred enemy on a bubble, so everything was rerolling ones to wound, to hit and to wound. So it's just like, yeah, thanks for coming out. I literally get nothing for it.
Yeah, well, what did I roll up? I rolled up, I had the opportunity to outflank the Tyranid
army with
my four units of Necrons.
Well, see, the funny thing is, like, yeah, because even if you'd outflank, there'd have been nothing there, because I'm still mobile, I'm Tyranids, right? But I mean, you know, in my second game against your Necrons was, you must use the lowest leadership, so you couldn't use your character's leadership.
All across the board, leadership 10.
So I mean, that's kind of why That's kind of why I'm looking at it, and I'm just like, you know what? Warlord Traits is
funnier than it was
right,
when it happened.
Right? Warlord Traits is one of those things that I think the idea is interesting. I like the idea of saying this is the general of your army, and he is special in some way. But my issue with it is when I read all 18 of the possible things, whether I'm taking command, personal, or strategic traits, there's like two that I want. And there's 16 that literally do nothing. Right. So it's like there's 16 that fucking suck, two that are okay, and those two are in different traits. So it's always like on a 1 in 6 chance, if I pick the, you know, this trait, I'll get something. And that's why I'm just like, I think it's a good idea. I think it's
very
executed.
The specific armies are going to be very, very sure about which warlord trait that they want to use. But really, to me, I disagree with you on this because, you know, I feel like it should be at best a bonus, at worst a perk. And 50% of the time, it should be worth nothing. Because this is not something that people are going to be building their lists toward. And it shouldn't be. And so to me, I look at it as just a bonus. Hey, you know what? I may get the thing that I want. I may get the night fight bonus on my close combat army, which is great for my orcs. Or I may get the reduced leadership bonus against an army where that works really well. Orcs, again. You know, like, I think that there are things in there where you would look at it and say that there's two I really want. There's 8 that are okay and may actually apply. And the rest of them are just garbage.
Yeah.
And to me, I feel like that's just fun. It's like the mysterious terrain to me.
Yeah.
I look at it in the same thing. I look at it and I say, you know what? But that's just fun stuff that you're adding to the game where it could just come out of nowhere. Okay, here's my question for you. Do you feel like that's going to apply to tournaments?
Well, the warlord traits? Yeah, because they do nothing. 9 times out of 10, warlord traits do literally nothing. I mean, how does this break the game? How does this confer an unfair advantage when, like I said, most of the time, your warlord traits do nothing? Because I agree with you. With that strategic reserve, do I want the ability to choose whether it's Night Fight or not? Absolutely. I'm playing my Tyranids.
Oh,
that is the one that I want. Is the redeploy units okay? Yeah, it's okay. You know, again, because I can't leave my deployment zone. So for me, my Tyranids, I'm already deploying where I want to be. The shortest point from A to Z is where
right.
I'm deployed.
You are absolutely
so
right.
So it's just like, okay, I can redeploy them. Why would I?
Unless you rolled the long board edge, you're absolutely right.
You know, and so that's why it's just one of those things where it's just like, 9 times out of 10, you're going to roll up a fucking, you know, and it's a D6, so technically it's 1 time out of 6, but I've been drinking, so fuck all of you. 9 times out of 10, I'm gonna stick to my guns.
9 times out of 10, inexplicably.
Shut up.
That's what happens.
It's just, it's not gonna do anything. And I think that's why I don't like the warlord traits, is only because it's a missed opportunity. Because you know what? I love the idea of saying your general is fucking amazing. So if you take personal traits, each one of those should be a fucking special rule. On a 1, he gets Hammer of Wrath. On a 2, he gets this. On a 3, you know, because you know what? At that point, you're saying, holy shit, he is amazing.
No.
You know, if you're talking about it, you know, but at
that point, that breaks the game. You're going to be in a situation where you're going to be playing a list where you're going to be building it toward the fact that you're hoping for 50% of the time you're going to get 1 of 3 special rules as opposed to 1 of 6 special rules. And you're going to be building an army around the fact that if you get a 50-50 chance, you're blowing people off of the table. Mm. I like the fact that the Warlord special rules are perks. They're nothing more than perks. Yeah. At the best, they're a bonus. And I know that that's indiscriminate at best, but
like I said, for me,
my vocabulary... you're right.
All right, man, this is going to be a fun second half if I start getting more White Russians. No, but I mean, you know, if you're an idiot enough to build a list that relies on a coin flip to say, okay, half the time I fucking win, half the time I lose.
No, you're wrong. That's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is half the time you're blowing people off the table and half the time it's an even game.
Yeah, fair enough. But I mean, like I said, that's the only thing that I'm just kind of like, I'm so indifferent about it. Like when I look at all the other rules, it's just like, you know, the obvious choice for me not liking it is wound allocation. But after playing 2 games, it hasn't really been an issue. It hasn't cost me a charge. it hasn't, you know, really affected my units. I mean, I have no sergeants or special weapons because Tyranids don't, so it's not like, you know, I'm losing these on wound allocation.
Right.
But it's been a rule where it's just like, okay, it takes some getting used to removing from the front instead of the back. Otherwise, it hasn't affected a game.
Okay, so I'm going to break us off here because we are going to go start our game here real quick. I do want to read a quick post by Matt Lau, who posted on the JD Gamercast Facebook page. Ahem. After playing 6th edition, fuck flyers. All caps.
Woo!
Those things are yelling. OP as all fuck. GW is going to have to hand out Skyfire or something like Goram Candy to make these things a little bit easier to deal with. So points for the Firefly reference.
Absolutely.
But this is something that we're going to talk about when we get back, because in our game, I am playing with my Doomscythe, who I absolutely love, and I think that we can speak a little bit more to this, so that's going to be the first topic when we get back, is going to be the idea of AA and how that's going to apply to 6th edition and what we're going to see in upcoming codexes. But, God, please let this not crash the software when I hit stop.
Yes, because last time we did this, it crashed and we had
to
drink.
It did crash and we had to redo it.
Yeah, like I mean, before. I'm already feeling it the way that if we had to start drinking and re-record again, it would be a mess.
Well, you know what? Like, we could re-record without drinking anymore, but it's just about standards.
Well,
I don't think that anybody would appreciate if we did that, so we don't want to take a break here.
Fingers are crossed.
Fingers are crossed. Here it comes.
Problem is both games that we have played, you've run into poison. And yes. Tyranids just get poisoned on fucking mass. So your toughness 7 is worthless. So that's why game 1, both of your Catan were brought down by Gargoyles. And this turn, one was brought down by Termagants and one was brought down by the Doom of Malachi. With his cheaty McCheaty 3d6 leadership.
Well, all it came down to is the fact that I just couldn't make 4 plus saves to save my life.
You failed 4 of 7, which close on the one. I mean, the other one, he was just fucking worthless. I mean,
the other guy just couldn't do shit.
Yeah, because I think you failed 4 of 6.
4 of 6 or something close to that. But yeah, it was pretty bad. But yeah, obviously Nathan 2-0 for the new edition against me at this point with my Necrons, which is always fun.
I think my second list much better than my first.
Well, yeah, I think that the Carnifex squad that you had built up was something that worked very, very well for you, especially against Necrons, you know, to say the least.
Well, yeah.
I think against Guard you'd feel pretty underwhelmed, but for the most part, it does what it needs to do against stuff where you're talking about a 4-plus save and not a 3-plus save, because there's really a large gap between four and three.
Well,
plus.
Absolutely. I mean, we talked about how Feel No Pain... Well, I hope we talked about it. It could have been the first one. We talked about how Feel No Pain at a 5-plus is significantly worse than a 4-plus. That 1 point, you do notice it quite a bit. Honestly, I think the Carnifex unit, even against a guard army, would be amazing, because if it's infantry guard, I'm killing 20 guys a turn. If it's mech guard, I'm popping a chimera every turn because I'd be stripping off hull points. Because, I mean, 36 twin-linked strength 6 shots every single turn.
Yeah, and you didn't have a problem taking down my flyer this game.
Yeah, I mean, well, what was actually hilarious is the first turn I hit it 9 times, needing 5 plus, and I stripped it. I got one glance for one hull point. And I was just like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, 8 dice fucked this up. But then the second turn, they did right and just dropped it like it was nothing.
Quick. Yeah, so it was a lot of fun. All right, so let's talk a little bit about kind of how we're feeling right now with the addition and kind of where we feel that level of polish is, because I mean that's always going to be an issue for any gamers where you talk about playtesting, you talk about min-maxing, and you know this creation of the metagame that's going to happen over the next 2 years. You know, if things stay the same the way that they were with 4th and 5th edition. So it's very easy to kind of overlook a lot of the stuff that we're seeing right now. Do you really feel like this was playtested into the ground, like they really did cover the bases? Or do you feel like it was a lot of great ideas that weren't necessarily, you know, polished off a little bit?
Honestly, I mean, at this point, and take it with a grain of salt, I've played 3 games, but at this point it really feels like it has been sort of playtested into the ground. Again, on paper, the wound allocation front to back is a nightmare. Realistically,
in practice, it's not.
Yeah, in practice, it really isn't that bad, because all it really did is meant that my Tyranid Prime died off the first volley because he failed all of the 3+ saves he was asked to make.
Yes.
Every last one of them. Which, hey, it's a dice game. It happens. But, to be fair, all that unit, like, all the Tyranid Prime in that unit of Carnifexes exists for is Synapse absorbing wounds. So, I mean, he did that very well. Right. And if I get into combat, the Lash Whip makes anything the Carnifexes fight initiative 1, so that they're not going to get fucking rolled over before they get a chance to fight. So, I mean, honestly, he kind of did his job. A little disappointing that he didn't pass a save. But, I mean, yeah, it really feels like everything just kind of works, from snapshot to flyers to everything. Because, I mean, you know, again, in our first game, your Doomscythe had its way with me. There's
yes.
absolutely nothing I could possibly do to counter it. In this game, I mean, you basically zipped right in to kill my Harpy, which was one part drunken deployment, one part bait. Okay, 2 parts drunken deployment, 1 part bait. It did work as bait after
you
I summoned up a little.
You reminded me on 4 separate occasions that was a drunken deployment issue. But again, like, even in the end, like, yes, you were able to shoot him down, but he made up his points in that first shot.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that's what's really great, because, I mean, if you played an army that didn't have hits flyers automatically and insta-gibs my toughness 5, 4-wound monstrous creature... I mean, when I played John, though, you know, against his Chaos Space Marines, those Harpies were phenomenal. I mean, they zipped up, they stripped 2 hull points off of a Predator and shook it so it couldn't shoot me. And even though he pulled Skyfire on every objective, giving his entire army the ability to hit me on Ballistic Skill, you know, he only stripped 6 of the 8 wounds off of the both of them, and then the falling out of the sky roll killed one and didn't kill the other, and then they got charged by Terminators. But so, I mean, it even then, in both instances, came down to, if I'd rolled a 3+ instead of a 1 or a 2, and yeah, I did it on both of them, because, hey, I can't make 3+ saves. They both would have still been in the air, they'd have both still been in the game, and I'd have been able to finish off that Pred, possibly start chipping away wounds, scythe attacking, dropping Spore Mines. So, I mean, you know, despite the fact that they showed up, did one shot, I was still very happy with how they did.
Right.
And John was able to, without any Skyfire, obliterate them. So,
yeah.
I mean, that's why, you know, to Matt's point, you're just like, yeah, you know what, flyers are tough. Flyers are good.
I think it's just something you need to be building for.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
That's really all it comes down to.
You know, like, that's the thing is, like, for me, building lists, I would absolutely take at least one flyer, because to me, when I see flyers now, I really see them being the boogeymen. Because, I mean, your Doomscythe, in our first game when I couldn't do anything about it, you know, sure, he earned its points back, sure, he harassed me, but he at no point won you the game or lost you the game. He was just kind of there doing his thing.
He did kill your Hive Tyrant.
So? My Hive Tyrant would have died anyway.
But that was him making up his points in that
game. Sure,
some.
You know, hey, you're totally right.
I think
he
made,
like,
double his points in that game, without a doubt.
You're absolutely right. But I was still able to pull it out and get the win, because,
yes.
Again, he wasn't game-breakingly good. And that was me, for the most part, ignoring him. I think I did 2 vector strike attacks on him.
Yeah, I also, you didn't have any better options at that point.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But
vector strike 6s will glance.
Yeah.
Nothing.
But for me, also, it was really just the composition of my list. You know, like, I haven't played my Necrons a ton, even in 5th edition, and really, for me, it's very clear that I need to start trying to kind of redirect my list into a different direction, kind of build it in a different way, and deploy it in a very different way. Even in this game, I felt my deployment was a lot stronger, but
when your immortals run away, I mean, leadership 10 leadership is 10 not is
the
reliable.
Worst leadership in the game. Why would you rely on it? You'll fail that three turns in a row.
I was only two. Had we gone two. To a third, you might have run off the board.
I was sure was going to fail and run off the board in the third turn. But yes, definitely, you know, like, things go good. I mean, turn two for me was amazing, where I was just tapping shit across the table.
After your turn two, I just looked at it and I was like, I'm fucked. I had one synapse creature with two wounds out of six left. And I was just like, I'm fucking dead. Then I got my turn two, shot down your flyer,
killed. My shit ran.
Yeah. You shot your immortals and they ran. Killed one of your Catan shards and killed or dropped three of four Tomb Blades. I mean, reanimation protocols got them back up, but it was just like,
mortals.
Oh yeah, your mortals, they didn't give a fuck about reanimation protocols. If I killed one, they died.
Yep.
But yeah, so I mean, like, that was the thing where it was just like, oh, you had a phenomenal turn two. I had a better turn two.
It really and then kicked it just back snowballed. Around. Yeah, it was pretty funny. But I mean, you know, I had a lot of fun with every game that I played, and I think that that's a good indication of the game. I didn't feel like the games were getting stale. I didn't feel like I was playing the same game over and over again. I felt like I had to kind of pay attention to secondary objectives, which was actually kind of interesting the way that they've done them right now. In this game, you know, like you said, I started very strong, and in turn two, I had made up two victory points. You know,
you actually had three, though, because we were playing the one where you get one victory point for everything you kill.
Yes.
So when you killed my Prime, it was not only one for killing him, one for First Blood, and one for Warlord. So yes. It was just like that one.
So I had a fucking glaring lead.
Well, and actually, you even ganked my Harpy, which was First Blood. So it was just like, yeah, you were up to like a 4-0 victory point advantage right out of the gates. And I was just like, I'm fucked.
Yeah. And even when I conceded the game, I could tell that it was relatively close. But really what it came down to was, even in my most amazingest of dreams, I would never have been able to get an additional kill point, and I knew that you were going to wipe me off the table. So at that point, it was fairly clear that, you know, there was no place to go, and, yep. You know, we've been drinking, and
yes.
Thank God for pizza and chips.
Well, yeah, because... here's the thing, is it's an immediate jump for everyone. I feel like I'm more coherent.
Yes.
And way less drunk than I mean, I know I'm less drunk.
That was an hour and a half ago.
I sound less drunk.
Well, I was just happy to be able to finish the podcast before my kids came home. My wife goes, are you drunk at 4 p.m?
And now we can say, no, it's 6. It's I mean, 6. It's evening it's no at this big deal. Point.
You know, that's cocktail hour, ho. But really, you
and
know,
I only sent one drunk text, so I mean, we're good.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about kind of, again, I really do want to focus on the general overall first impressions, because I feel like that's really important right now. For me, there are rules that are standing out. I feel like the snapshot rules still after this game stand out in my mind as just being very dramatic and very kind of not game changing, but when they do hit hard, they do help those units be a little bit more combat effective just for the fact that you're whittling down what you have.
Mm-hmm.
And the changes to rapid fire were the other thing that kind of stands out for me, because really in the Necron list, because of course I want to be using gauze for everything right now.
Well, yeah, why wouldn't you with stripping hull points?
And that's exactly it, right? Unfortunately, I'm playing Tyranids, so that means next to nothing.
Yes.
But really, what it really was, you know, the ability to move in rapid fire, the ability to rapid fire on a snapshot. I mean, all these things are very, very helpful for the Necrons and for the majority of armies that I tend to play when you start talking about snapshots and various weapon types, you know. I think the only thing that I felt really hurt with in this game was not being able to snap shoot my template weapons, because I switched out my destroyers for Tomb Blades with the particle
beam,
which was good. I mean, the particle beam did good wounds.
Yeah.
But again, it really didn't come out because you were playing a very heavy monstrous creature list as opposed to a horde list.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, yeah, I mean, in terms of the Tomb Blades, I would stick with them. I think that they are a better choice than the destroyers because the bigger potential with the blast templates. Not to mention the fact that
going with like Twin Link Tesla would be better.
Yes, absolutely. Because I mean, you know, it's just one of those things where it's just like, you know, with your warriors and your immortals and your fucking Doom Scythe, you've got enough firepower. So why not go for something that's going to thin the herds should you run into a horde army? Because I mean, even if you played Terry's Tau, I mean, those Tomb Blades would demolish Kroot. Like, you'd be pulling handfuls of them off at a time. For me, again, you know, if we're sticking with my first impressions, I'm having fun. And I haven't had fun with 40K for a very, very long time. Because I remember the first time that I was, that I can, you know, recall not having any fun playing a game of 40K was the Apocalypse game against Maddie.
Yeah.
Where it was just like, it was like me going through the motions and just being frustrated at my army the entire time. Because, I mean, we're basically playing 5th edition with Apocalypse strategies. This is
reaffirmation of the things you've been talking about the months leading up to that
game. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And that was it. Is that game just really just hammered everything home? Because when you play, well, you like 6,000 points. Well, 40K
for you.
It was. And, I mean, you know, since then, I think I've played, not counting the tournament with my demons, I think I'd played 3 games. One, I'd borrowed a Space Marine army, 2 with my Tyranids, right. And I hated all 3 of them. And even when I played the tournament with my demons, I thought the first game was funny, haha. Games 2, 3, and 4 were, again, they started to feel stale, you know, and it had everything to do with the fact that I had played that game system to death. And here I am, you know, 3 games in. I mean, obviously you're not going to judge an edition off 3 games, but I am still enjoying it. So I mean, at this point in the tournament, going into the last game, I was so done with 40K that all I really wanted to do was go home, you know, whereas now I'm just like, hey, maybe we can get another game in, you know, right. maybe we'll right. do something else. It'll be right. fun. You know, hey, maybe Terry will come and I can get a game in against her tower.
Play my orcs and proxy that, that doom side. There's a fighter bomber.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, like I said, I remember when I was like, hey, I'm going to proxy a list. It was like, before I was like, okay, Hormagons counts as gargoyles. This was like full on proxy. All right, all 3 of my Trigons are Carnifexes. Yes. The Hieroduel is a Harpy. And the High. So, I mean, it's.
Yeah,
just...
Tyranids are a bad draw for my Necron army, to say the least. I really feel like if I had played my Orc army, I would have done a lot better. But really, even my Orc army, like I said last night when I was playing the Tau, I need 2 more trucks and I need 2 of the anti infantry fight a scream a.
Jets,
you know, like the aerodynamic ones that make Marines look retarded.
Well, yeah, like that's the weirdest thing is like you look at the Orc one, you're like, that is the one of the nicest looking kits from an aesthetic perspective that I've ever seen. It looks like a plane and it looks orky. Then you look at the Storm Raven and you're just like, so were they trying to make the short bus look awesome? Because they succeeded. Bus still looks retarded. But if I had to pick one, put them side by side, and I had to pick one, I am picking the short bus every time. Like, that's how stupid this looks.
I was talking to somebody and I said to them, like, you know, I drive a Ford Focus station wagon because I have kids. It still looks cooler than a guy on a Segway. And that's all the Storm Talon is a guy on a Segway. That's all it is. It will never be cool. It will never look cool. And that's just, that's the way that it goes. All right,
it's weird because, it feels like the design studio thought the look that sums up Space Marines is a Land Raider, but instead we're going to rip off the side treads and we're going to put jet engines on it. And you're just like, what?
Yep.
That looks retarded.
Retarded it is. I have to agree. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about our stupidity check for this week. Obviously, this episode's not going to run super long because, like I said before, there's just way too much stuff to talk about. It's hard to get into any conversation with any sort of real tactical depth because of the fact that we are still all kind of learning the game. I think Nathan and I both feel very positive about this edition right now. I think that it does kind of alleviate the woes that we were seeing in 5th edition in terms of especially the missions and the builds that we see on a regular basis. You know, we're not going to see as many parking lots. We're not going to see as many leaf blowers. You know, it'll be another 2 years before we really start seeing the metagame kicking in hard and net lists becoming a real common sight.
Mm-hmm.
So for the most part, you know, I think we're generally happy. You know, change is good. And I think that's what that comes down to. But stupidity check for this week. Nathan, what is it?
You know, I'm going to go to the Allies table. And I know a lot of people, you know, like, oh, Eldar and Dark Eldar, blah, blah, blah. But for me, as a Tyranid player, because I will make this about my Tyranids, why can't I have Imperial Guard as an ally? And now, for those of you new to the game, you know, you 5th edition kids and all, this doesn't make any sense to you. To you old school, jaded gamers, Who remembers Gene Stealer cults? Because I, for one, would have been fucking thrilled if I could have made a Gene Stealer. Like, I would have converted up Chimeras to look like fucking limos. Because, hey, do you remember the limo rules? The only Armor 9 vehicle
fuck
in
yes.
the game?
Fuck yes. Armored limos, son.
Armored limos, Armor 9. It was fucking hilarious. So, I mean, I would have loved the opportunity to make up sort of a fluffy Gene Stealer cult list. Even if I wasn't, you know, brothers in battle or whatever the fuck the super trusted one is, you know, even if I had to go with something like a neutral ally, I would have just been happy having something that I was allowed to do. Oh, your family's here. We gotta get this
done.
We gotta finish it up. But yeah, so
you'll notice the language drops quite to the timid level.
It's
gotten
G rated all of a sudden.
Very soon.
You know, so I mean, for me, that's kind of my stupidity check is, you know, this is an edition that's trying to give a lot of stuff and has added in allies so you can be really fluffy and build kind of fluffy lists that would be fun and interesting. And you miss Gene Stealer cults.
Well, you know, you had said before that you really do like the allies rules. And
yeah, I love them. I hope to God
you hope
I can
that you
play
see them in tournaments, right? Now, even I had said at one point that I never felt like they would ever make their way into the tournament play scene. But really, the way that they're written right now, there's not a lot of real game-breaking combinations for them. There's some very effective combinations for them. But that's very different from looking at something and saying, like, oh, well, that's just going to destroy the game. And, you know, having Grey Knights in this army is going to absolutely overblow the
Your
way
Necrons
that those are
need
playing.
Grey Knights librarians, right?
Apparently, Necrons and Grey Knights are fist-bumping buddies. But
thanks, Matt Ward.
I think that they're a little bit ridiculous, the Allied rules, but whatever. I mean, but going in with what Nathan was saying, every complaint that I've had with the Allies rules, especially like Eldar and Dark Eldar, has been validated through the fluff. So if you're going to talk about going into the fluff and really talking about the fluff, yeah, Gene Stealer cults were a very popular thing for a very long time in the game, you know, and having that just be nothing for the Tyranids, especially when you're talking about putting an army onto the Allies table with zero options. Like, yes. What, you couldn't squeeze one in that has been in the fluff for years? Like, you couldn't have done that? Like, it would have been very, very good for you to actually have made that work. But unfortunately, Games Workshop just decides that, much like the Necrons background, meh.
Yeah. Who cares about the background? We rewrite it all the time.
They're all Egyptians. They're very political. Oh, no, they have souls. They talk about stuff. This one guy has fetishes. You know, like, it's just, that's the way the Necrons work.
This other guy's
now.
A collector. He plays war games. It's really meta.
Exactly, man. He's the hipster of the Necron army. He's got all those little baubles hanging off him. That shows how cool he is. One of them's Tau, one of them's Eldar.
I have the wire-framed glasses and skinny jeans.
No, for real. He's like Kyle. He was playing Eldar before it was cool. And then after it was cool, and then after it was really not cool. You know, that's all he plays. He plays Eldar. But yeah, okay.
We love you, Kyle.
We do love you. Okay, so really, when it comes to 5th edition, what I'd like to do at this point is, I think everybody's aware of the fact that what we're going to be doing now is we're going to start breaking down real tactical side of things. We're going to go from like a top-down approach of the movement phase, the shooting phase, the assault phase, special rules, things of that nature. We're going to start talking about specific armies, how they're going to apply. If there's any one thing that any of our listeners would like us to talk about, feel free to send us an email or post it on the Facebook group. And we will try our best to try to fit it into the show and actually talk about it here. So I guess the last thing that I want to throw in there is, you know, there's always going to be highlights to any game of 40K. But a lot of times when an edition change comes around, there's going to be something that's a highlight because of a new rule. So for you, what's that highlight?
Oh, way to put me on the spot.
Well, for me, again, what I'm going to throw back to is the snapshot rules. Because I feel like the snapshot rules were the ones that, in every single game that I played, there was at least one moment where you were just like, oh, that snapshot paid off.
Yeah.
You know, most of the time you either did no wounds or you did one wound and it was like, ah, no big deal. But, you know, in every single game, there was at least one snapshot in one turn, in one instance, that just utterly paid off. And I feel like that's the shining glory for me when it comes to the games that I've played in 6th edition so far.
You know, for me, I'm going to go to flyers because I feel that flyers are something that have been in the fluff for 40K forever and have never really been represented in the rules. I mean, even Apocalypse didn't really handle flyers that well. You know, I feel that flyers are just epic. It's one of those images, like, you know, I think Kyle always talks about it when he's just like, when you have two painted armies, they're squaring off against each other, it's like a movie in your mind. And I think Flyers just add that level of just, like, something that's really cool and awesome and interesting to look at and things of that nature. And, wow, you know, I'm surprised your family has been very quiet thus
far. I think they understand at this point that, you know, we're close to wrapping up.
We're trying to wrap up. But, I mean, like, so for me, I love the inclusion of Flyers. I mean, I think it the writing's been on the wall since the Guard got the Valkyrie Vendetta kit. Personally, I'd like to get a lot more games in against, you know, armies that already have a lot of Flyers, and I think Guard are going to be a key one of them. Guard have been playing Valkyries and Vendettas. Well, Guard have been playing Vendettas forever, and I mean, I'm interested to see how they are as Flyers, you know, and like, that's the thing, is just like, for me at this point, I am excited to start going to more tournaments, especially playing 6th edition. Maybe I'll even change up my fantasy games night to a 40k games night, just so I can start seeing these different armies and trying it and getting a feel for the edition. Because, I mean, even if I'm playing
the I start to miss the fact that I'm not living in Calgary right now.
Yeah, I mean,
'cause I'd be going out to Imaginary Wars for Vets Nights.
Yes. Because, I mean, like, that's the thing is even though, I mean, I was bored to tears of 5th edition having to play the same army again, I'm excited to play Leafblower. I'm like, I want to see how Leafblower works. I'm curious. You know, well, I really like we talked want about to before, play where the fact that, like that.
That's not the community that's playing anymore. It's not the community that wants the simple, dumbed-down version. They want the version of the rules that's actually going to make them feel superior and make them feel like their experience actually means something, as opposed to the guys who were playing 5th edition, who've been playing it since 3rd edition, coming in and losing to a guy who just started 3 months ago, but he's playing that list that's point and click.
Yeah.
You know, and it's very much that type of metagame. So, you know, obviously at this point, I think it's very hard to tell what the metagame's going to be, and I feel like, I feel very passionate and very excited for the stuff that I want to do. What I want to do right now is I want to finish my Necrons, because my Fine Cast Catan are so terrible. I'm just going to blow through them.
Mm-hmm.
No point in trying to make them look good because they're so bubbled and fucked up.
Yeah,
no
those mold lines are brutal.
Oh, my God.
Well, remember, I recommended you painted your Nightbringer like Harvey Dent because that mold line that goes right down the middle of his face. So I was just like, yeah, go for it. Painted side of his face looking different. I think it'd be hilarious.
I want them all to stick to the gold disco colors. but very much so, like, you know, I'm going to paint up very, very few models, and then that's what I'm going to have for my 1,500 points. I'm going to have to paint up a couple more stuff to actually make my way into 17 or 2,000 points, but really, it's not that much. And then after that's done, I'm just going to truck into my guard. And I'm going to pick up a couple of flyers for my guard, and then I've basically got everything that I could ever need for my guard. And then hope that the new book actually returns us to a place where guard feels like guard.
Yeah. Well, for me, I'm actually on the fence. On the one hand, I'm having a lot of fun with my Tyranids and being a battered spouse. I can paint Tyranids forever. It's just one of those things. I've painted them for 12, 14 years now. Jesus fucking Christ.
I kept saying to somebody, like,
holy
he keeps
crap.
Talking about the fact that he's going to get rid of his Tyranids one of these days, but he's never going to get rid of his
you
Tyranids.
You know, I might sell the existing
it's
army because...
It's not going to happen.
Well, the only reason I might sell my existing army is I have painted up a test model in a blue and gray color scheme that I'm in love with that makes all of my red and green ones look like shit. So I might sell them just to get that sort of clean slate start again. But anyway, what I'm looking at this point, we'll wrap up since we can start hearing the kids.
You can
in the
start
background.
Hearing the children crying.
Look,
and
they can
screaming.
Only be quiet for so long. It's These just, are young kids, impossible. All right. For me, I want to have a look and see what the state of allies is going to be. Because I mean, I love the idea of doing a Chaos Space Marine army with some Chaos Demons in there. I think that in terms of allies, this doesn't really break the game, even though my combination might. actually, even then, it really doesn't, because I was pricing out Plague Marines, and they're fucking expensive.
I don't think it will.
But anyway, I think that Chaos Space Marines and Chaos Demons is a natural fit. It's basically taking the old codex that used to exist, bringing it back.
That's what I was
and having
say
a lot
well.
Of fun with it. So if allies are in, I will probably end up painting Chaos Space Marines, because I already have Nurgle Demons painted, and I think doing Death Guard, you know, Heresy era Death Guard with Nurgle Demons is cool.
And I love Marines in gray. Awesome. I think Marines in gray looks really good.
Nice. You know, so I mean, like, there's that. But if the community as a whole sort of rejects allies and I can't bring allies to major tournaments and things like that, I'm probably just going to repaint Tyranids.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm really hoping for my Imperial Guard that allies are going to stay into the public face of the tournament gaming in the community is because of the fact that It was roughly 7 years ago that I had actually converted up an Inquisitor and painted him up, and he looks gorgeous, and I love him. And he's just a really nice Inquisitor. And I always wanted him to be part of my Talaran Imperial Guard, but as soon as they kind of got rid of the option to have that happen, it just stopped becoming something that I was excited about.
Yeah.
So, again, that is one of those things that, yeah, I'm going to have to play with the Allied rules and kind of figure out what I'm going to be able to take, what I'm not going to be able to take. But for the most part, I should be able to get him back into my Talaran list, which I'm excited for.
Well, you know, and the one good thing for me is I don't really have to decide, because right now I still have to paint about 400 points for Warhammered next month. So for me, the edition just came out and I'm going to be sitting down, Notes of the Grindstone, painting fantasy nonstop, which actually gives the community time.
I'm very likely going to be giving an army to Maddie. So I've got like two armies ready to go for Warhammered.
Nice. You know, actually, I thought three of something. Total. Hey, if I cannot get off the pot and actually paint my demons, Wood Elves with a Demonic Pact. Boom, 3,000 points.
That would be funny. we are talking about Ting and his groups. They're all about Storm of Magic. They'll let you do it.
Well, no, it's in the rules book. It is you can take up to 25% of your points as either a bound monster or a
You mean pact. Player's Pact?
Yeah, that's the one.
Player's Pact.
Drinking! Yay!
That's Jaden Gamercast for this week. My name is Lang.
I'm Nathan.
Have a good one.
Cheers.